Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim Potts back on the air, and as usual, thank you so much for listening to me, and I do always appreciate you spending your Sunday evening or your afternoon with me, depending on which coast that you are on. Thank you so much. Hey, today we're going to talk about a topic called Where Are the Women, and I'll explain that a little bit as we go along. But basically, I've been asked to look up a certain topic regarding women as lone wolves, et cetera, so I'll be doing that. And actually giving you some history that people don't realize about that topic as well. But before I get into that, and also my emails, as you know, I'm always reading emails that people have sent me. I want to send a few shout outs. The first one I want to send out to is Our Delta Force. For those of you that are not aware, Our Delta Force last night was instrumental in the death of the founder of ISIS. Al-Baghdadi is no longer with us. We had a $25 million bounty out on him, and it looks like that's going to be money that's going to be saved, because apparently he took his own life as the Delta Force closed in on him, basically. So for those of you that are not aware of that, he's the leader and the founder of ISIS. He is no longer there. And the good thing about it is that we were also able to, I guess, get a lot of the information that he had, you know, paperwork, et cetera, on future plans and things of that nature. They basically stormed his compound. It was about 70 to 80 Delta Force troops that went in there in 8 different helicopters and moved in tight on him, and they were able to eliminate some of his guards, troops that were around, et cetera. And I guess he has tunnels or something like that, so he basically blew himself up in one of the tunnels that he had there, rather than face the music, I guess. But either way, he's gone, and he was at the top of the list after Osama bin Laden and then Osama bin Laden's son. But now is what's going on. We have a new player now that's going to be at the top of the list of Al-Qaeda, and that's his name is Amin al-Zahiri. So now he is now taken over in Al-Qaeda, so now he's next up on the hunt list, basically. So as you can see, we are doing what we need to do as a nation in order to try to eliminate some of these individuals that are spearheading, you know, some of these terrorist-minded individuals around the world. So at any rate, good job, Delta Force. The other thing I want to mention and send a shout-out to is that last night in Texas, we had another shooting. Homecoming Texas A&M, there was a homecoming party, and apparently an unknown shooter basically shot 2 people and wounded 14 as well. You know, these things are always kind of sad to hear about, obviously. You know, people are out having a good time, and now these types of things happening. I mean, these are college students. You know, they're there trying to get an education, trying to have some fun with these different breaks. We'd have a moment, you know, to relax a little bit, and now something like this. But, you know, the college campus thing with shooting schools, et cetera, we know none of this is new, but it's always sad to hear it. So just sending a shout out to the victims of that shooting last night as well. Okay, let's get into some of these emails. First one, Jim. A friend of mine who is a regular listener told me about your show last week. It was about holding parents legally responsible for the acts of their children. I thought it was excellent, and the comments are by everyday people who rendered opinions about the values, whether they were instilled or not instilled by their parents. You know, it's not as easy as it sounds. You know, parenting is very, very difficult. I didn't participate in the survey that I understood, but I wanted to at least send you an email about my thoughts that I didn't personally think that they should be held liable. But on the other side of the coin, I thought the answers on both sides and the way you presented them were awesome. And it's signed, a new listener. So, you know, just to let you know, listeners, I've actually taken this another step because the issue about values, it was interesting getting all of those comments, etc. But then I was talking to another friend of mine, he and his wife, we had dinner with my wife and I, and we started talking about the show, and I think in a couple of weeks, and I'll let you know exactly when it's going to be, we're going to be hearing from an actual professional regarding the issues of the parenting piece of this and the values and the different impacts in homes that could create these situations that create these kids going out and doing things that are inappropriate, we'll say. And sometimes it's not what you think, according to this person. So we'll see. So in a couple of weeks, but again, I'll announce it so that you can hear from a professional about this, because I think it's an important subject anytime it involves our children, obviously. Okay, next one. Jim, I saw on the internet where two female police officers were killed within a couple of days of each other. I know you try to stay on top of police officers being killed in the line of duty. I'm a regular listener and don't recall you're talking about two female officers that got killed. I hope you're not being a sexist. And then it says, I was signed and it was a PS. I love the show. Don't take it personal. Look, let me tell you something. First of all, just to let the listeners know in general, that I don't do any subject area being either gender bias in any direction, one side of the aisle versus others. I try to remain completely neutral with everything that I do. And those two particular situations, I did miss. You know, as much as I try to get everything out there, it's a lot to keep up with all the different subject areas that I talked about. But I did actually look and find about these two female police officers that were killed. And again, you really don't hear about it as often. I mean, it does happen. But I appreciated the email. But let's be clear about how I approach these shows. And none of them will ever be gender biased. I try to keep up with a significant amount of information, et cetera. So let me just go and let you know, for the listeners who do not know about this tragic situation. And both of those female officers, by the way, and this was earlier in the year, they were both rookies. Both of them had a short amount of time on the job. One was in Davis, California, and the lady's name was Natalie. The police officer's name was Natalie Corona. She was only 22 years old and was responding to a triple car crash in Northern California. And a gunman on a bicycle shot her multiple times. And it looked like an ambush, according to the department. And then after the shooting, the suspect reloaded his firearm and then fired toward a fire in a fire truck that were also responding to the traffic collision. And then the suspect fled. And, you know, that's a sad situation, because then the officer wasn't responding necessarily to what you would think would be a life-threatening situation, simply responding to a traffic accident. And then, you know, that killing occurred a day after a Shreveport police officer named Shateri Payne. She was shot dead at a home in the Louisiana city as she prepared to start her shift. And both of these individuals were basically new on a job. Corona had just finished completing field training and had been out on her own for just a couple of weeks. So, you know, that's sad. The good news is that they did find the person, because obviously they put a manhunt on for the shooter. But it ended hours later because police found him dead with a self-inflicted gunshot wound in his home. He had left a backpack at the crime scene with information that led officers to his home. So not sure, as usual with these shooting situations sometimes, why people do the things that they do. Louisiana lady that got killed, officer, again, she was newly hired, and she was in uniform and getting ready to go for work when she got gunned down. You know, she had just graduated months before. You know, what's interesting is that getting in a uniform and then presenting yourself out in the public, you have to be careful about that. I remember with the sheriff's department, that's not how we ever did it. We don't dress out at home, because that could make, you know, us a target. We wait till we get to the station. We have our lockers and we change there, as opposed to driving through the public streets in a private car, you know, in uniform. That's never a safe situation. But at any rate, there you go. Those are the two ladies that had been killed in the line of duty. And, you know, again, we'll send out our condolences to the families that will now miss these two ladies. Okay. All right. Let's take a look at the third one. Third email. Jim, my wife has become absolutely paranoid when it comes to going to the movies. I tried to tell her that sort of thing really doesn't happen. Can you give some info on this so she can relax a little when we go to the movies? Thanks, Jerry. Listen, here's the deal. You know, even my wife and I went to the movies last night. You know, you're still sitting there, you're looking around when we do these, and when we do these actor shooter trainings, people have asked us about the movie theaters, where's the best place to sit and things of that nature. I think the consensus is it's in the middle. But let me just tell you something. There have been, and Jerry, I can't give a certain reassurances here because again, the situation out here these days is that you never know. There have been some situations because shootings are terrifying no matter where they take place. But there's something particularly scary when it happens during a movie and right when people are least expecting it, which is probably most of the time with a shooting. Movie theater violence is rare, so let me tell her that so that she can hear that. But that doesn't mean that these events are any less meaningful or interesting. And there are situations out there. I think the main one that everybody remembers is the Aurora, Colorado shooting with the movie that came out, The Dark Knight Rises. Now, I know with this new movie out called Joker, there have been some comments that people were concerned. Anytime that you have somebody that's a character like that or The Dark Knight, people want to dress up, they want to do these different things, that's always going to present a scary situation with somebody going into the movie theater. Now, that wasn't, a famous event of a midnight screening of The Dark Knight Rises. But, you know, look, these things sometimes appear to be unprovoked. That particular case was a situation. And believe it or not, you know when that was? That was in July 2012. That was actually 8 years ago. And, you know, when he opened up in that, you know, and started shooting people on that audience. And that was that. And his situation, just as a refresher, he actually detonated tear gas canisters throughout the auditorium. And then he started using several firearms. So he went in there really totally prepared. You really don't normally find out about people using tear gas and things of that nature. The interesting part about it is where he even got that from, as an example. But Jerry, that wasn't the only time that this has happened. So it's okay to be cautious. Your wife wants to be cautious, and I agree with you about not being paranoid. But I don't know if the audience will remember, but going back a little bit further than that, because that was in 2012, but before that in 2008, and it was actually on December 25th, it was on Christmas Day, if you could believe that, a man shot another man for talking in the movies. That movie that he did that shooting was on, was the movie, I don't know if you remember, called Benjamin Button, The Curious Life of Benjamin Button. And that one had to do with a situation where one man was upset because another man was actually talking during the movie. And the man told a man and his family to be quiet during the showing of The Curious Case of Benjamin Button and then proceeded to throw popcorn at the victim's son. Now, you know, that's going a little bit too far. So obviously a physical altercation erupted between the father of the child that got hit with the popcorn and the guy that had told them to be quiet was unable to contain his rage, and he walked up to the other man and shot him. You know, for that family, that's got to be the worst, you know, Christmas ever. I mean, you're talking on Christmas Day, and somebody throwing something at your child and hitting your child. I mean, even though it's popcorn, give me a break. That's a battery, you know. So it doesn't matter that it was popcorn. And I'll just tell you about one other one, the movie Shutter Island, when that came out. That was in 2010. And in that particular situation, a person was stabbed with a meat thermometer, if you're ready for that one. I'm trying to figure out who in the heck brings a meat thermometer to the movies. But it had to do with a person talking on their phone during the movie. That kind of stuff is rude, annoying, and totally obnoxious. So when people speak out about those kind of things, there are people that will get upset. But look, you know, try to be a little bit more considerate when you're in a movie theater, as an example. A lot of people don't like people talking during the movie. And especially being on a cell phone and talking. You know, the movie at the beginning says, you know, to silence your phones, don't be texting, don't be talking. But there's people out there that are going to ignore that. But one of the things that I try to get across, even to the people that I'm training, is that, look, don't change your life or the life of your family for somebody you don't know, and never assume you know something about somebody who you don't know. These people these days are capable of anything. We went to the movies last night, and there was a woman that came out as we were at the concession stand first coming in that was telling the manager that some people were outside, that people were in the movie, a couple of people were in the movie that were talking, and that it was an annoyance. So the manager went in there. That's the way to go. Don't try and handle it yourself while you're inside. That's all. It's just, again, it's just not, it's not worth it. Okay? At any rate. All right. Let's turn around and look at this business about where are the women. I was asked by a listener, I think I mentioned it earlier, I was asked by a listener to look into a topic about women as lone wolves. And I've always encouraged everybody that if, in fact, you know, you want me to research a topic or talk about a topic, I'm more than willing to do that. So you have a couple of options. One, you can always call me at 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. You can go to the website and get that same number. Or you can email me at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. Listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com and send me an email. I get a lot of them. And if you want to get on our blog list as a reminder so that you'll know about the upcoming topics, our email blast goes out on Thursdays and Fridays about the upcoming show topics. So just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. Again, just text to Potts Associates to 22828, enter your email address, and we'll send you out the topic for the week, okay? Now, look, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was an interesting topic this particular person brought up. So I'm going to give you some information. I think it's really good stuff. And as a matter of fact, I actually learned something else that when you hear me talk about it, you're going to say, wow, didn't know that. It's going to be one of those situations, too, on a very small topic within this topic. The reality is women have been used in various roles, you guys, within, you know, terrorist organizations, and actually have played a significant role in terrorism in groups throughout history. Now, it's true, when it comes to explaining lone wolf terrorism, the absence of women is one of the more perplexing issues. But they have played these roles, like I told you. Terrorists, I'm just going to go back in time a little bit here. Terrorists as diverse as the Russian revolutionary group called Narodnaya Volya, and the German leftist, had this other group called the Separation Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam. And they also had the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia and the Palestinian Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. Those are just a few. And let me just tell you, those particular groups, they had women in their ranks, but also women rose to various roles within those terrorist organizations, including providing logistical support. And they did join their male comrades in violent attacks, even becoming suicide bombers themselves. Now, when you think about suicide bombers, you really don't think about women with this, but they are out there as well. I remember when I was in the anti-terrorism school, we had all kinds of pictures and things of that that showed us after the fact about somebody, well, before the fact and after the fact about some of these women wearing suicide vests and doing these things. And, of course, more of that, it was overseas. But let me tell you, women have been involved in virtually every type of terrorist tactic used by a group, ranging from hijackings and mid-air plane bombings to armed assaults and kidnappings. Yes, they are in it as well. Now, I will tell you, yet with only a few exceptions, really and honestly, all lone wolf terrorists have been males, no doubt about it. I mean, it's what you probably most common with, and that's why this person wrote to me to ask me about these females as lone wolves. But it is not as though women are excluded from becoming lone wolves. I want to make that clear. This form of terrorism, believe it or not, is an equal opportunity employer. Anybody can do it. All right? Anybody can do it. No barriers. which seemed to exist in preventing a woman from venturing out on her own to blow up a building, hijack a plane, or initiate a mass shooting. And I think on previous shows I've actually told you about some women that have actually done mass shootings, mass killings as well. Again, a far and few between. I think I also told you at that time that normally women's choice of getting rid of people, so to speak, is poison, is the number one way. But that doesn't exclude all of these different areas. I want to make that clear. So it begs the question, why has lone wolf terrorism been a male-dominated activity? And I think that's important. And you know, in order for me to answer that question, you got to first look at and examine the role of women in various terrorist groups, both today and in earlier periods, for any clues as to why women have not acted as lone wolf terrorists. Now, again, make it clear, there have been some, not denying that. So, look, it starts out by females who participate in terrorist groups. When women began embarking on suicide operations in recent years as members of various terrorist movements, people were understandably shocked because that's not the expectation. Women are not looked at like that. That's violent behavior. The public had grown accustomed to male suicide bombers, but the idea that a woman would also blow herself up in order to kill innocent victims was just mind-boggling for people. And the concept of a female terrorist was still something most people had a hard time grasping, despite the fact that women had participated in terrorist groups for a long time. And let me just tell you, a long time is what I just told you. And it began with the Russian terrorists in the late 19th century and continuing, believe it or not, today with both Islamic and non-Islamic militant groups. Understand, women have consistently been integral players in the world of terrorism. They are out there. And I'll explain a little bit more about that. But before I do that, let me just tell you, just to give you an idea about how far it goes back that women have been involved in terrorism. Terrorism was actually rampant in Russia in the 1880s. Yes, that far back. And as many of you know, I've told you before on the air about domestic terrorism going back as far as the late 1700s. This is the 1880s, all right? The 1880s. And during that time frame was really the first modern terrorist group that I just told you about, Narodnaya Volya. And basically, and that's in Russian, it means the people's will, by the way. And they waged a relentless campaign of dynamite bombings against government office officials, culminating in the assassination of Tsar Alexander II in 1881. All right. Now, dynamite, which was invented in 1867, so there's a little tip for you, by a Swedish chemist named Alfred Nobel. That word Nobel ring a bell to you? I'm going to come back to that in a second. But he invented dynamite and was a godsend for anarchists and other militants since it was a powerful weapon that was easy to conceal. Nobel, was so dismayed to see his invention used for violent purposes. He intended it to be used for peaceful endeavors such as construction. He was so upset by this, guys, that he left millions of dollars in his will to do what? What do you think that he did? Millions he left in his will. I'll tell you what he did. He left that money to establish, are you ready for this? Here's a little history for you. The annual Nobel Prizes, including the Nobel Peace Prize. So now that's something that I never knew until I started researching this. So the Nobel Peace Prize came out of the fact that he had discovered dynamite, and he was so dismayed at that fact that they were using it for these types of things. He created the Nobel Peace Prize, so that's where it came from. So there's his name. He turned around and Alfred Nobel, or Nobel, however you want to pronounce it. He's the one that created dynamite, and now there's a Nobel Peace Prize out there. But look, the Russian terrorists embraced dynamite because in addition to its wide availability and easy use, it had an important symbolic value as well. And the assailants, they were usually killed along with the targeted person, and it separated the terrorists from common criminals. So understand that point. When somebody is ready to blow themselves up, they are not at that point just a criminal. They are a terrorist. All right. So that's when it started, when terrorism actually started from that standpoint, as we know it today, you know, and you know, look at it this way, separate terrorists from criminals, because the criminals, they were afraid to use such a weapon. Criminals didn't use that. You're talking about blowing themselves up? That's not what those guys were doing. They'll kill you. They weren't interested in killing themselves. And I'm going to tell you something. It also inspired admiration among some segments of the public, since the perpetrators were basically sacrificing their lives in the attacks. So what are we talking about? We're talking about these acts of terrorism in the early 1880s like this. People really were impressed by that, because here's somebody. And remember, they were fighting against the Russian government back then. And they were impressed that these women would take their own lives against these government officials and everything to get their point across. So, yeah, and I'm going to say something. Some of the women that were in those groups as terrorists, they were quite prominent, quite prominent. It actually took several decades before women really became prominent, more prominent in terrorist activities, because for a while it slowed down, all right? It slowed down. That organization was actually crushed, all right? The People's Will Organization, as I told you, and I gave you the Russian name for that. But they basically, you know what's going to happen under Tsar Alexander III, because his father had been assassinated, he fought against all of the terrorist attacks that they were receiving, because, again, his father got killed during a terrorist attack. But then in the 1900s, the Socialist Revolutionary Party took over, and with women once again being very active. And in fact, from 1905 to 1908, there were 11 terrorist attacks committed by Socialist Revolutionary women. So as you could see, women have been involved in terrorism a long time, even though we don't look at it that way. Now, after 1998, is what happened was, it ended up being several decades before women once again became prominent in terrorist activity. So I'm going to push it up to the late 60s, okay, 1960s. And in the early 1970s, they witnessed a surge in terrorism around the world, with many spectacular incidents captivating public attention once again. And for those of you that have been around and might remember back in those days, Palestinian militants were at the forefront of that kind of violence. And in 68, if you guys remember, the liberation of Palestine hijacked an Israeli airplane on a flight from Rome to Tel Aviv. And they even done movies about that. And then later in that same year, other planes were hijacked. So remember when hijacking became a big deal, all right? They started hijacking planes and killing people. Those are all examples of terrorists. And women were involved in that as well, all right? So, you know, these women, one in particular, you know, she gained notoriety in some places around the world. Her name was Leila Khalad, all right? She instantly became the most famous female terrorist of her time. People were actually mesmerized by this woman, by the concept of a woman seizing and blowing up planes or doing other dangerous things thought to be the sole province of men. So she became popular. And I'll tell you something else. She was also very attractive. She was beautiful, smart, daring, and one observer even said in my research that she became a sex symbol for her violence. She shattered 1,001,000 taboos overnight, and the revolutionary thinking of hundreds of angry women around the world changed as a result of that. So she had a big influence on terrorism. That's amazing, okay, because you don't look at it that way. We don't think about people that way. Now, let's fast forward a little bit more to this 1970s. Because, like I said, women became prominent in other terrorist groups in the 60s and the 70s, including the Red Brigade. Now, this is not something that you would know, but it was the Red Brigades in Italy. And then in the United States, for those of you who remember the 60s and the 70s, we also had the Weather Underground in the United States. Now, it used to be called the Weathermen, for those of you that remember, but the name got changed to avoid alienating feminist supporters. So they changed it, you know, from the Weathermen as well to the Weather Underground. Okay, so, you know, we didn't want to be sexist, I guess. Now, they had one episode during that period that some of you, at least in my age group, might remember, and that was about Patty Hearst. Remember Patty Hearst? She was the granddaughter of the newspaper guy, William Randolph Hearst. And then she was kidnapped, and then she ended up joining the Seminese Liberation Army in the United States in 1974. For those of you who remember, we actually back then in those days called it the SLA, It was easier than saying out the whole name. So she became known at that time, obviously, as a terrorist, because they were going around robbing banks and doing other things like that. And, you know, she put it out there that she had been kidnapped. For those of you that aren't familiar with her, that she had been kidnapped. And then all of a sudden she ended up basically capitulating to the wills of the people that had captured her, kidnapped her. And she basically kind of became one of them. It was a big deal during those times. I'm sure some of you may recall. Then we ended up with extremist groups that had long prohibited women from participating in violent activities in the past. And then the waging of jihad or holy wars, that was always seen as the thing for the men, not for the women. And, you know, women were kind of held back from doing things for a while. But then the success of female terrorists and other movements eventually led fundamentalist religious extremist groups such as Hamas, which is the Islamic, you know, for those of you who don't know, the Islamic resistance movement, to change their practices. And then the head of Hamas, his name was, Sharik Ahmed Yassin. He ended up getting killed in 2004, but he was the one that started pushing some things in that direction in terms of, you know, the women, et cetera. You know, you look at those things and see how this stuff progresses. I mean, because we look at things, you know, we're in the United States. We don't think about women doing these kind of violent acts because, again, we always hear about the men doing it. And we need to have it drawn to the attention that, first of all, anybody and everybody is capable of committing these acts. I know in one of the previous shows I talked about women who were mass killers. And like I said, they were more with poison and other methods like that, as opposed to this kind of violent behavior. Now, these ladies, you know, who were female suicide terrorists, were also prevalent during 2003 to 2011 when we were in the war in Iraq. So you might remember during that time frame, women were doing these types of things. There's some of them that got captured. Again, they became more prevalent. Now, during that war, it was believed that some women were motivated by the loss of their husbands, in all honesty, or loved ones. So they were motivated, you know, for revenge against the United States and, you know, et cetera. So, you know, they became terrorists in their own respects as well, and the things that they did. They had a group, a Chechen group, called Black Widows, and that was because of the situation where they had lost their men, basically, you know, throughout this time frame. And Al-Qaeda, specifically Al-Qaeda in Iraq, a homegrown Sunni insurgent group that was believed to be held by foreigners, recruited many of these women from the Black Widows because, again, they were motivated to strike out because of the fact that they had lost their men during the war between 2003 and 2011, when the United States had occupied those countries, etc. So, you know, look, people get upset about these things, these ideologies, etc. And it's amazing. I mean, it's out there. If anybody has any comments, you can call in on it, 818-602-4929. Really giving out information here. But the widespread use of female suicide bombers, you guys, in different countries reflects the tactical advantages these women provide for terrorist organizations. Now, hear me on that. We're not really expecting these women to do these things. If a guy shows up, what do? We're checking him out. We're checking him from weapons, things of that nature. So let me just tell you, women are less suspicious than men. So you got to understand that. So because of that, there's less of an issue that we're going to think that they're getting ready to do something. But we, as a nation, have to be prepared. Because even if you look at it like the couple in San Bernardino, don't forget that. That was a male and a female. And it was thought at that time that she's the one that influenced him to engage in the behavior that they, you know, subsequently did there in San Bernardino. So we can never leave out the thought about these women in terms of being lone wolves. Now, because of the fact they're women, they're less likely to attract the attention of security personnel. And keep in mind that many of the conservative societies, even in the Middle East and South Asia and elsewhere, there's always going to be a hesitation to do what? Body search a woman. I remember with the Sheriff's Department, we had to learn a specific way that if we had a female suspect and we did not have a female deputy to assist us, we had to do a body search, you know, and a pat down in a certain way. I mean, and that makes sense because otherwise we, you know, as males, we did not want to be accused of groping or anything like that. You know, it's tough enough. It's even worse now, of course, with all of this about sexual assaults going on as well. So as a result of that, there is a lot of hesitation to body search a woman. And as a result of that, some of these women that are terrorists have used that to their advantage because they're not being searched. Now, a woman, if you think about it, can wear a suicide device beneath her clothes, appear to be pregnant, and thus easily bypass security while approaching her target. Now, these women have done that to the troops overseas. That's happened. When a woman's pregnant, nobody's going to question the fact that she's pregnant and with child. No guy's going to turn around and pat that woman down. Think about that. You know, that's not going to happen. So that's what makes it very difficult sometimes. The surprising part is, though, is that we haven't seen more of this. You know, and that's one of the things that, but that's not to say that it's not coming at some point. But I will tell you, with the rise in female suicide attacks around the world in recent years, security personnel are now becoming more aware of this form of terrorism, thereby eliminating the element of surprise for the female terrorists. They got no choice, all right? They have to do it this way. Now, that means there's been a change because in the second decade of the 21st century, the role of women in terrorist organizations has changed from the heyday of female terrorists and from the 1960s and 70s, all right? And now women have even ascended to leadership roles and other important positions with some of these revolutionary groups. So, you know, when you ask me about lone wolves and females, they're there, all right? They're out there. We just don't get to hear about them because they're not out there as much as we hear about the males. Let's put it that way. Now, let's take this a step further because to more directly get into the issue why there are so few female lone wolves. Look, while there's no consensus on how many lone wolf attacks have occurred throughout the history, I think most of the observers and the people who look into these kind of things agree that the total is quite small, which is what it is. But part of the problem is in gaining a consensus stems from, you know, the old thing that, you know, the old nemesis, so to speak, the definitional dilemma. Disagreements are out there about whether a lone wolf has to be an individual acting entirely alone or whether he or she can actually have some help from others or whether there's been a political or religious motive and so forth. I mean, that's just the way that it is. All right. Now, some terrorist databases do not even include lone wolf attacks since their definitions of terrorism require the violent act to be committed by two or more people. And that's something that you don't think about. Now, to me, how the hell can you call it a lone wolf if there's two people? It's not a lone wolf. It's not a lone wolf. Now, wolves operate in a certain way. Well, I'll talk about that in a minute anyway, about how they operate, basically. But when we look at these things, you know, there's one chronological that's been published, and there's things that are out there on this, by the way, that between 1940 and 2007, understand that there was 32 cases of lone wolf terrorism in the United States and only 42 between 1968 and 2007, all right? Now, when you look at those numbers, you say, well, you know, that's not that bad, but it is bad. You know, it is bad. Now, other countries have more than us. I mean, some of it's just ridiculous, and I know I don't have to tell you about that. You know, so the lack of female lone wolf activity, guys, can be attributed to several factors. This includes women being less likely than men to take risk. Women placing a higher value on social interactions is part of it. And belonging to a group than men, you know, I mean, the probability of women developing antisocial personality disorders than men, that's what they say. Less opportunity or probability of an antisocial personality disorder. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but that's the information that I was able to gain. So as a result of that, there's a lower likelihood that women will kill a stranger. And the tendency for women to kill more on impulse and emotions than on premeditation. They will do, if you understood that, they will, I should rephrase that. They don't do it on premeditation. They do it based on emotions. Women getting upset, guy doing this, guy doing that, or other issues that present themselves, they're going to do it based on the emotion, supposedly. Now, look, don't start writing to me talking about how I'm thinking about women from an emotional standpoint versus guys who have a different emotion. Look, I'm not getting into any of that. I'm only saying that generally that the research has shown that when they get ready to do something, it's more on an emotional state as opposed to the premeditation. Now, again, with the terrorists that are out there, where I've talked about with the hijacking and things of that nature, I'm quite sure that that was all planned. All right, so they're part of a group, understand, not necessarily as a lone wolf. All right. Now, the other side of the coin I want you to understand is that lone wolf activity is a risky endeavor. I really shouldn't have to tell you that. And they look at this, and the reason why they called it the lone wolf, and I think that is the terminology that has now become part of our society, that you hear this on the news, et cetera, about these lone wolves. That concept actually comes from wolves. All right? This is true for both the lone wolf animal and the lone wolf terrorist. So understanding how wolves respond will give you a flavor for how lone wolves, in terms of people, react. Because I'm going to tell you, the animal, going it alone increases the chance of death. That's why I tell you, this is more high risk. So women are more high risk than men. Excuse me. Now, wolves travel in packs. They do that to ensure their survival in the wilderness, including the ability to bring down large prey and get rid of predators. And it's rare when one wolf breaks away to venture out on his own. They don't do it. Now, is what happens is that they have what they call a subordinate wolf in the pack. And what a subordinate wolf is that he doesn't get to eat like everybody else, because he's basically the weakest one in the group. And eventually is what's going to happen is that he's only going to get to eat the scraps and nothing at all. Okay, or he's going to face an increased aggression from the pack's dominant wolves. So is what happens is, in order for him to find a mate or whatever, he's going to be prohibited within the pack. So once the subordinate wolf leaves the pack, more difficulties can ensure, including the dangers of trespassing in the lands belonging to other packs. So there's a need to search hundreds of miles to safely find food and other hardships. So that's how wolves act. All right, now look, in all honesty, sometimes lone wolves may find mates and form new packs. We all know that. But this business about the lone wolf terrorists, they work similarly. And they have to make choices about taking risk before venturing out on their own to commit a terrorist attack. An individual has to have enough confidence in his or her ability to actually hatch up a scheme, acquire the necessary weapons or explosives, reach the target, commit the attack, escape from the scene, and so on. That's what you have to think about. Now, look, there might be at times be one or two other people to provide minimal assistance, but for the most part, the lone wolf terrorist is, and she or he or she is on their own. It's not an activity for those who are risk averse. And while joining a terrorist group and embarking on a group mission, it is also filled with risk. All of that. Now think about it. How many times has law enforcement caught up and caught somebody? Okay, these are all individuals. Sometimes you do hear about people that have supplied them with information, weapons, things of that nature. If you remember the shooting at the Pulse nightclub a couple of years ago, they went after the wife of the shooter because they said she must have known something, and yet she never said anything. The shooting in Las Vegas with Paddock, they went after his wife, but she had gone to the Philippines. I mean, she went back there to visit family because he had sent her back there, but she knew nothing about this. I mean, this guy, you know, gathered 67 weapons. But she never thought anything more about it. Guys collect guns, no big deal. You know, so, you know, we in the past, law enforcement that is in the past, has actually looked for anybody that may have assisted somebody in any of these mass shootings in any respect. That's why if you also notice, you'll hear in the news about some of these individuals that sold them the guns, like the gun stores and things of that nature. But again, they've argued, and I think most of them successfully, that how do they know what a person is going to do with this weapon? I mean, it's not a weapon that everybody buys and goes out and starts shooting people. And a majority of the people that go in there to buy guns are not going in there to commit mass shootings. Now, let's be clear. To be a lone wolf terrorist, it involves many different types of risk. And each level of this risk is where law enforcement can catch them. And that's what we've been doing successfully, because sometimes these individuals talk to undercover agents that when they're trying to acquire weapons and things of that nature, and they get caught. Now, let me just tell you, and again, I'm not being a sexist here, but here's where gender differences become relevant. Because accordingly, research has found that women are less likely than men to take these kind of risks. Among some of the explanations offered are that women view risky behavior as resulting in unfavorable outcomes more so than men, and they believe that they will become emotionally upset or harmed by the negative outcomes should they occur. Okay? Now, again, don't be writing to me about this. I'm only telling you about what the research has shown. Now, another explanation proposes that women are not as overconfident as men. Where, you know, there could be a negative trait for men. This could be actually a negative trait for men if you really think about it. But anyway, at any rate, because they're not as confident, they're not as overconfident, and so therefore they're not as likely to take these risks. Now, it's also been stated that another reason is that as primary caregivers, and when we talk about that, we're talking about the role as mothers. Women avoid risks that could harm that situation. So these mothers are what they are. They're mothers. They have children. So they don't want to risk that role. And that's interesting. And yet another explanation links risk aversion to lower levels, okay, if you're ready for this one, of testosterone in women. So I don't know. I'm only giving you the research on this. Now, the relative lack of risk-taking in women as compared to men appears, therefore, to be one reason for the scarcity of female lone wolf terrorists. And I got to tell you, we don't know whether, when contemplating a lone wolf mission, so to speak, a man looks upon it as an adventure and throws caution to the wind, while a woman is likely to be more cautious and calculate the numerous risks involved in going it alone. However, it would not be surprising if this were indeed the case, is what I'm telling you. Now, you know, as much as I have talked on the show about so many different topics and things of that nature, some of these things end up coming out as time goes on. There are people out there, in my opinion, that are women, as I have told you, that have engaged in this kind of behavior. And you never know when we may see more of these in the future. But it's out there. Now, they say women desire interactions and human connections more so than men. And that makes a big difference between the sexes, because and that's relevant to understanding the death of female lone wolf terrorists, is that women value human interactions and connections more so than men. Again, this is what the research says, folks. This is not just me just talking here. And they say this is the reason for this is that it's due to the different socialization process that women, men and women experience throughout their lives. So, I don't know. According to some experts, women are socialized to be independent and attuned to relationships, whereas men are socialized to be autonomous, independent, and self-reliant. Now, look, this business is about self-reliance. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but there's a lot of women out there that are self-reliant. They don't necessarily need men in their lives in order to be able to do things. So let's just clarify that. This is speaking to certain issues with this topic. And to me, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule. One of the things I always tell people is don't you know, don't think it can't happen. I mean, this stuff can happen. It can happen to you. It can happen to me. It can happen to anybody. And who that perpetrator may be, in my opinion, although we may not think it's women or women would be capable of, about doing this, you simply just never know. Now, they also say that paranoid schizophrenia and antisocial personality disorder are less common in women than men. All right. Now, I don't know what that's all about, but that's what it is. Always have a concern about these things. In my mind, I don't want to say I don't trust anybody, but what I'm saying is I'm skeptical. Anybody to me is capable of doing any of these things. And, you know, I wanted to address this issue because a listener sent in and asked about lone wolf terrorism and how it applies to women. So I gave you some history on this today to show you that women are just as capable of committing these acts, although the numbers in terms of being a lone wolf are very small. There's still always that possibility, and that's what we have to keep in mind. Anybody is capable, all right? So look, as always, you know, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio, and I really do appreciate it, but unfortunately, it's time to close out the show. Now, one thing I do want to mention to you also is don't forget to go and take a look at that book, Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips. It's on Amazon now. Just Google James William Potts and get it. We've sold a lot of books in the last month, and I really thank the people out there that have been purchasing the book. I do appreciate it. Now, look, if you like what you heard, do me a favor, spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, be safe, but more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next week, guys, be safe.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.